निकुंज बिहारी। गोपी जन बल्लभ गिरिवर धारी, यशोर नंदन ब्रज जन रंजना, यशोर नंदन ब्रज जन रंजना, जमुना तीरा पानचारी, मुनतीरा पानचारी, तयो राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी। Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Krishna Krishna Hare Hare, Rama Rama Hare Hare, Hare Krishna Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna Hare Hare, Hare Rama Hare Rama, Rama Rama Hare Hare, Hare Krishna Hare Rama, Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahamsa Parivagacharya Sturasat The Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada Ki Jai Ananta Koti Vaishnavindi Ki Iskon Fongda Chara Srila Haridasta Iskon Fongda Chara Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Namachara Srila Haridasta Kui Premsika Ho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Adaita Garada Shri Vasudeva Gaur Bhaktivedanta Shri Shri Radha Shri Shri Radha Shamakunda Radha Kunda Girgo Varan Ki Brenda Vandam Ki Jai Mayapur Dam Ki Jai Ganga Mai Ki Jamuna Mai Ki Bhakti Devi Ki Jai Tulsi Devi Maharani Ki Jai Gau Premanandi Samvena Bhakti Vindi Ki Jai. All glories to the assembly devotees, all glories to the assembly devotees, glories to the assembly devotees, glories to Shri Shri Guru and Gauranga. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam. Do you have the verse? So it's Canto 3. takes, what, 40? Chapter, what chapter? Chapter 40. So, good. Canto 3, chapter 14, text 22. Good, that's it. That's it. Sometimes you become completely disoriented with when the verse is not. Okay, good. Thank you. Atapi kamam etam te. Prajatyai karvayan alam. Yatamam nati rochanti. Muhurtam pratipalaya. Atapi kamam itam te. Prajatyai karva. Nilam Yatamam Natiro Chanti Muhurtam Pratipalaya Atapi Kamam Etam Te Prajatyai Karavanyalam Yatamam Natiro Chanti Muhurtam Pratipalaya. Anybody? Atapi Kamam Etam Te Prajatyai Karavanyalam. Yatamam nati rochanti Mahurtam pratipalaya. Okay, atapi. Even though it is not possible. Kamam, this sex desire. Etam, as it is. Te yar prajatyai for the sake of children. Karavani, let me do. Alam, without delay. Yata, as. Mam, unto me. Na, may not. Atiro chanti. Reproach. Muhurtam. A few seconds. Pratipalaya. Wait for. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace. Even though it is not possible to repay you, I shall satisfy your sex desire immediately for the sake of begetting children. But you must wait for only a few seconds so that others may not reproach me. Purport. The henpecked husband may not be able to repay his wife for all the benefits that he derives from her. But as for begetting children by fulfilling sexual desire, it is not at all difficult for any husband unless he is thoroughly impotent. This is a very easy task for a husband under normal conditions. In spite of Kashyapa's being very eager, he requested her to wait for a few seconds so that others might not reproach him. He explains his position as follows. Om Gyana Tirmanasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Sakshamutam Yenatasmai Shri Yodvenama Sri Chaitanya Manovishtam Staptam Yena Bhutale Swayam Upakaramayana Dariswara Purantikam. Jai Sri Krishna, Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda, Sri Daita Gadada, Sri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So this topic is a little sensitive. In some ways, sometimes you can say adults only. But, you know, we have to be expert to present it in a way for everyone. This force of sex life, Maituni Agar, is the most compelling force within the world or within the universe. Srila Prabhupada often writes, and so many poets and writers and everything says that it is that this force that keeps the world moving, spinning, and keep creation and annihilation going and coming constantly, because of this foremost desire to copulate, to procreate. And so it's a very powerful force that cannot be underestimated unless one is trained in the art of Varnashram Brahmachari. In fact, Lord Krishna has divided society into four groups. The first group, Brahmacharya. The student is trained properly to tackle this very lifestyle, the Grihastha lifestyle. So within the Brahmachari ashram, he's trained in such a way to control his senses and follow the different austerities so that he can able to approach Grihastha life properly. And Srila Prabhupada in earlier verses said that the girls are also trained in chastity to approach this life also. And then again Srila Prabhupada writes that this is the Grihastha ashram is the only ashram that allows marriage or marriage life. The three other ashrams are not allowed. And he went on to say too that it is maybe the Grihastha is on a safer platform to fight this urge than on the other three ashram. That the other three ashram, unless the candidate or the practitioner has strong sadhana, he would not able to face the urges of Maituni, the sexual urges. See? So Srila Prabhupada wrote that sometimes he can be in a helpless situation. For the Brahmachari, if he's unable to continue Brahmacharya life, he could fall within the Grihastha ashram. But for the Vanaprastha and the Sannyas, once they have gone, one is gradually detaching himself and then one fully detaches himself. And so for them, it's more difficult. Because both of them, if they turn back, then they can be ridiculed, really. The Shastra actually condemned them. See? I mean, that's how it is, really. Maybe, especially for a sannyasi to take up householder life, then it's thoroughly condemned. But Srila Prabhupada was a little lenient. And for his sannyasis, he said, well, okay, better you get married and still continue preaching. Whereas, and of course, Vanaprastha, also, I mean, he's not totally renounced. So if he's unable to keep up the vows, then maybe he could fall back to grihastha life, but it's like an embarrassment also. So this force is so powerful that all the scriptures, or at least the Vedic scriptures, have written so much about it, really. And there are so many stories about it. So many stories about this life. You have, Lord Krishna had given the story of Puru Rava, and Urvasi, Puru Rava and Urvasi. And then we have Yayati and Damayanti. And then we also have, not Damayanti, but Devayani. Then you have Nala and Damayanti. Then you have Kacha and Devayani. Devayani had engaged with Kacha for 1,000 years before she actually married to what's his name? The memory is going. Yayati, is he? So Kacha, Devayani spent 1,000 years with Kacha. But Kacha refused to marry her because she said that you're like my sister. Because, I mean, most of you must have known the story. How many of you know that story? Kacha and Devayani. Yeah, it's a beautiful story. I read it when I was young, really. It was very, very beautiful. That they spent 1,000 years together. But also, even though they spent 1,000 years together, I don't think that they had union. They just were like courting for that time. But at the end, she said, well, you have to marry me. And he says, well, you're like my sister. He was born from Sukracharya later on. He was the son of Brihaspati. And what had happened, the demons were taking advantage of the demigods. And so the demons knew the art of Sanjeevani. That is, Sukracharya knew that art. Sukracharya learned that art from Lord Shiva. And so what happened, when the demons die, he would bring them back to life. And the demigods, the demigods, when they die, they die. I mean, that was how it goes, really. So they sent this boy, Kacha, to learn the art of Sanjeevani from Sukracharya. And he went there. So when the demons realized that was his aim, they killed him. And then Sukracharya revived him back by mantras and so forth. Then another time again, one time they kill him and at him or something, and then another time they kill him and throw his ashes into this ocean or something, and Sukracharya revived him again. And then another time, they kill him, ground his ashes, put it in a drink and gave it to Sukracharya. So when Sukracharya revived him, he came up in Sukracharya's belly, you see? And when that happened, well, that was a dilemma. Because then for him to reborn, Sukracharya would have to die. And so then Sukracharya would have to reveal the mantra to him, the mantras of Sanjeevani to revive the dead. You see, so that's how Kacha learned the art of Sanjeevani from Sukracharya. So when he learned the art, then he told Devayani, well, I cannot marry you, and I have to leave. And she cursed him. Forget exactly how to curse it. But then he cursed her back and says, since you desire to marry me who is a Brahmana, you're not able to marry a Brahmana. You see? So that was how Devayani later married Yayati, because Yayati was a Kshatriya. See? So that was how the course explained it, really. So and then you all know the story of Yayati found Devayani in this well. She was thrown into the well by Sharmista. And so then this Yayati found her and took her up. And then she said, since you held me by my right hand, you have to marry me. And so he married her, spent a great deal. And then Sharmista went as maidservant. Sukracharya told him not to have any affair with Sharmista. But Sharmista provoked him really. And as a Kshatriya, if a woman requests you for copulation, you cannot refuse. And so he united with Sharmista, got two sons, Devayani. Got to know about that. She went told her father, who was a little fiery guy, Sukracharya. Sukracharya caused him to become old right away. So then he begged his son to take his old age and give him his youth, because he was not quite satisfied with marriage life yet. I mean, so this is the force we're talking about. It's so powerful. So then what happened? Puru gave him his youth, the son Puru. And so Yayati became young again. And then they said he enjoyed for thousands of years more. And then that was it. So that's these stories. And there are so many other stories, very powerful stories. And then there are stories of Faldong, like with Vishwamitra and Urvasi. Kandu and Padmalochi. And there was another sage. My memory is like failing. I used to know these names like tea, but now it's like, see if I could remember this other sage. But there is, anyhow, so this sage, he had also married Sukanya, who was a young person, and he was pretty old. But eventually he also got his youth back through the Ashwini Kumaras. So the point is that this shackle is very powerful. The urge, the force of sex life is very powerful. Most of the movies are based on this, love stories. Most of the Indian movies is songs and this kind of thing. The whole Indian movie industry is based mostly on this. And if you all know, I mean, there are so many songs. I mean, we hear the songs, but we don't know the meaning or anything really, you know. But the whole, that. The books, so many books, literatures are written about love all the time. Plays are acted, so many. So this is how the world is moving. Stated, it's moving, and so the force is very powerful. But here we have to understand that Kashyapa and Diti, they're progenitors. And this morning when I went home back, I went online, and immediately on Facebook, they showed the evolutionary theory, and they said, and they showed the species, all the different species, and they say they came about by evolution. And so I will detour a little bit to explain, because if you're a progenitor, it means that the living entities are coming through the creative process. Evolutionary has two fundamental theories that explain how life came about. And one is a biogenesis, where through the combination of matter in an ideal situation and time, life evolved. And so that's called a biogenesis. So that is the foundation for evolution. And evolution means, like gradual cell division, more and newer species are born. So that's their second principle. From unicellular beings to multicellular beings, and then gradually, from little creatures all the way. And they're showing pictures online. They were showing it this morning. So that's why I say I would tackle the subject a little bit. I don't know if it was a coincidence or if it was a revelation or what really, but I said I would explain it a little bit really, because these two theories are the cause for atheism in the world and atheistic society. This world is moving rapidly towards atheism too. Half of Europe is actually atheist. And some of the countries are more atheist. Some, especially the northern countries, they are about 85% atheist. Yeah, especially those northern countries, Finland and the other countries. Yeah. Memory is going. I used to know these names like tea. So anyhow, China is about 90% atheist. Japan, about 80% atheist. Vietnam, about 80%. See? So, especially because of this fundamental theory. And the other theory, which is called Big Bang. Those three theories. So, we're dealing here, Kashyapa and Aditi, their progenitors. And Kashyapa was married to 13 sisters of Aditi. And I would name them and I'd tell you what they did. So one of Aditi's sister was Aditi. And from she came the Adityas or the demigods. And of course, Aditi came the Daityas or the demons. And then another sister was Danu, and that came the Danavas. And those were a different type of demons also. Another sister was Kashta, and from she came the horses. Another sister was Arista, and from she came the Gandharvas. Another sister was Surasa, and from she came the Rakshasas. Another sister was Ila, and from she came the trees and herbs. But also this might be a little puzzling, really, to hear, well, a female gave birth to trees and herbs, you know? But the Shastra says this, and we have to accept this, really. It might have been done in a mystical way, you see? But that's how it goes. Then from Muni came the Apsaras. Krodavan came the ghosts and Pishashas. Tamra came the birds. Surabhi came the cows. Sarama came the wild animals. Timi came the marine creatures. So this is scriptures. And these are the sisters of deity. And this is how all the different creatures came into the world. So this immediately will falsify the evolutionary theory, you see? And then the daughters of Kashyapa also continued the process of creation. And it stated from Suki came the parrots, Sheni came the hawks, Basi came the ospreys, Gridi came the vultures, Sugridi came the pigeons, Suchi came the cranes, Vinata came Garuda and Aruna. From Arun came Jatayu, from Sursa came serpents, Kadru, the cobras, cows, buffaloes, and so forth. So these are the wife and daughters of Kashyapa, and they are called the progenitors of mankind. And the other species of life. So that would definitely clarify the concept that life evolved from unicellular beings. See? And so that is important for us to know, and so we can refute these theories. As preachers, like I've explained so many times too, it's important for us to know, and so we can refute. Not only that, another important thing I would challenge the scientists is that all the creatures were larger in the past, and they are getting smaller. So this is regression. Evolution connotates like progression, you know, the species progressing. But we can see that they are regressing. All the fossils in the past are larger than the present fossil. So there's a verse in Srimad Bhagavatam says, Tatashchanu dinam dharma satyam saucham shamamadhaya kalena balina rajan nakshyati ayur balam smriti. Sutta said, O king, religion, truthfulness, cleanliness, tolerance, mercy, duration of life, physical strength, and memory will all diminish day by day because of the powerful influence of the age of Kali. So this is denoting that everything is going down. Then there's other verses within Srimad Bhagavatam says that the creatures, all the creatures are gradually dwindling also. The cow would look like a goat at the end of Kali. And the trees, all the big trees here now will look like plants. And in Satyuga, all of these were giant. Like if you study Bhagavatam, it stated that trees were hundreds of yojanas tall. You don't have that now, you see? So because they are all going down. And then, of course, Lord Shiva also was telling Parvati in one of the tantras that all the creatures are going down. And he especially explained mankind. He stated in Kali Yuga, mankind was 21 cubits. In Treta Yuga, there were 14 cubits. In Dwarpa Yuga, there were 7 cubits. And in Kali Yuga, there are just three or four cubits, small, like midget, you see? And then little by little, they would go down from, let us say, people are like 6 feet now. Gradually, by the end of Kali Yuga, they would be like 3 feet, midget. And they also say that girl would give birth at the age of 5 and 6. And old age would step in at 15. Death would come at 20, like that. See? So all these are dwindling. So these are our ways to refute this evolutionary concept also. See? And so that is important. So coming back a little more to the seriousness of divorce here. Prahlad Maharaj gave some warning about this Maituni Yagar and Narad Muni and some other sages. Prahlad said, Yan Maitunadi Grihamedi Sukham Hi Tucham Kandu Yanena Karayor Eva Dukha Dukham. He says, sex life is compared to the rubbing of two hands to relieve an itch. Grihamedis who have no spiritual knowledge think that this itching is the greatest platform of happiness, although actually it is a source of distress. The dhiras can tolerate this itching. So that was what Prahlad Maharaj was saying about sex life. Then Narad Muni was telling Yudhishthira, Nan Vagni Pramadha Mama Griha Kumbha Samapumam, stated woman is compared to fire and a man is compared to butter. Therefore a man should be careful in associate in associating even with his daughter in a secluded place. Then Yayati, after he lived thousands of years with women, he came to this realization. He says, Matra Swarsha Duhira Va Nan Viviktakshano Bhavit. One should not allow oneself to sit on the same seat with his own mother, sister, or daughter. For the senses are so strong that even though one is very advanced in knowledge, he may become attracted to sex life. Then Prahlad is saying here again, Matirna Krishna Para Swatova, Puna Punas Charvita Charvananam. Because of their uncontrolled senses, persons too addicted to materialistic life make progress towards hellish condition and repeatedly chew that which has already been chewed. And then Sutta to the sages, Kamasya Nendriya Pritir, Labho Jiveta Yavata. Life's desires should never be directed towards sense gratification. One should desire only a healthy life, since a human is meant to inquire about the absolute truth. And then, of course, Lord Krishna was telling Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita, Pravitim cha nivritim cha janava vidur asura. Those who are demonic in nature do not know what is to be done or what is not to be done. Kimanyat kama ahaitukam. The demonic say that the world is produced from sex desire and has no cause other than lust. And then it's stated, Trividam narakashyedam. There are three gates leading to hellish life, lust, anger, and greed. So these are great warnings by these great personalities about this force. And so that's why the training of brahmacharya is essential. The training for the boy and the girl are essential so they can able to tackle grihastha life in a sober way. This is essential, because grihastha life is fundamental. But if it's not tackled in a sober way, a lot of problems can come about. I mean, I'm speaking about it, and in my own life itself arose so many problems later on. And it is because of handling the life in an immature way, not being trained properly. You see? I noticed quite a lot of Prabhupada disciples stuck together, and I guess because of the force and purity of Srila Prabhupada and his direction and everything. But the younger generation now, it's a disaster. And marriage life is actually a disaster also, because we probably beat the Christians. The divorce rate in Christianity is about 60%. But in ISKCON, it's probably over more than that, because that force is that you know, I mean, we're not handling it, I think, properly. We need much more training and understanding. And even if there is quarrel and so forth in a family, you see, within the Vedic system, when that was there, when discontent and family and when there were so much discontent, dissatisfaction in the family, the network of family come together and get everyone back together. But that is absent now in our society to a great extent. That foundation is not there. That's why even up to today, the divorce rate in India is very low. It's stated maybe 5-6% or 4-5% sometime. Because that Vedic foundation is still there. Even in Islam, because Islam in many ways copy from the Vedic context. And their divorce rate is very, very low also. Maybe 6-7%, you see. But we, even who should know better, really, look at our rate, really. I mean, it past any other thing. Christianity also is in complete danger. In other words, in some faith, marriage life is becoming extinct. You see? Because the foundation is not really there, and the help, see? The help is not there. And so when you're dissatisfied and so forth, and there's so many factors. Like if you have a lot of children to take care, that's a big problem. Then house chore and everything, that by itself is a big problem. In Vedic society, sometimes the mother helps, the mother-in-law helps. So many people come together and help take care. You know, there's a network in the family, and all these help so much. But now that is absent, and so it becomes very difficult to tackle this problem. And so separation happens. Then the children is one place, the mother one place, the father one place, and everything is in chaos. You see. And so, there's great need even to address this problem more. And so, I mean, this verse is speaking, and Srila Prabhupada speaks about the henpecked man, you know, but in his context it's a little different, because maybe the connotation is that he is a person who is like under the skirt of the wife. You know, that's how the understanding goes, really. You know, but you know, Kashyapa really was not like that. I mean, you know, like I said, he was a progenitor. He was not really henpecked, really. You know. I mean, one little thing, before I close, one little thing I like to address quickly. And this, the training, like now they're what they call sex education is being taught in school, but also it should be maybe taught within our society. But maybe a different word should be used, maybe procreation education. You know, you use a more scientific term, procreation education. And in simple terms, what it means, every month, the female, not only in the human species, but in the animal species too, the female releases an egg which would produce a child. You see? And so when that egg is fertilized, a progeny comes into being, you see? So within the animal kingdom, God, you could say God has programmed the animals to understand this concept, you see? And so during mating season, the animals, you know, they indulge in this. But for the devotees to indulge in copulation, they have to chant 50 rungs. That is important, you see. So to engage, to chant in 50 rungs means at least you have to know the day, time, so many factors, and then you do that, you know. I can remember when I married, you know, I went into marriage life. So every month I was chanting 50 rungs, you know, hoping to propagate progeny. But I did this for like 2 years and nothing was happening. So, you see, and I was wondering what was going on. But it was because of my lack of the bio, you know, the understanding of biology, so to speak. You see? And so when later I get to understand, then procreation becomes easier. And then, you know, chanting your 50 rungs. Of course, chanting 50 rungs is always good, you know. But I can remember chanting 50 rungs every month for 2 years. One time, one of my friends, he embarrassed me. He said, "You married for 2 years and no kid yet? What happened?" What happened to you, man? You know, and I felt, not only that, but he said, like, you want me to help you? You know, that was even more embarrassing, really, you know, because the way he said it, really, I mean, you know. So anyhow, really, so like I said, we probably have to address this area more and put more effort into it, really, especially marriage life, to get the devotees together and stay together. That's what Prabhupada wants. And sometimes that also means simplify our living, our lifestyle. Because when you're striving for a big house and so many things, cars and everything, then the stress of working and maintaining and getting it, so the husband is busy there, and then the wife is busy with, it's a whole chaos, really, you know. So Srila Prabhupada explanation, simple living and high thinking, that philosophy should be considered also. And then we can probably tackle grihastha life in a more sober way, so that ultimately marriage life in this way is meant to liberate us. You see? But if it is not approached properly, it can become a source of entanglement. See? It can become a source of entanglement. And so I'll stop here if there's any comment or correction, question. Yeah, Mataji.
Hare Krishna. So you're quoting statistics about divorce in different parts of the world, and I assume that there are people who, you know, statisticians who figure out that kind of thing, but as far as I know, in ISKCON, nobody has done any kind of survey to figure out what percentage of people get divorced. So
some devotees, a lot of devotees, you know, talk about it, and I've done surveys here.
Who?
Yeah, I've heard devotees, I mean, say that our divorce rate in ISKCON is pretty high. It's,
right, people know,
like
can say
60.
It. Doesn't these, mean it's
these
true.
These are knowledgeable devotees who have actually done done research.
No, yeah. Who?
Yeah, yeah.
Who is doing statistics? I'm asking.
Continue talking. I'll try to remember somebody that I heard it from.
I'm just saying this because, you know, I compiled the Srila Prabhupada disciple database. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when you're dealing with statistics, you have to have hard data. You have to, like, count.
Yeah, of course, you have to.
People can throw around statistics all they like, but what is, where, show me the survey. Who has done that work? I don't think it's anybody who has done it.
Okay, put it, let me give you a little advice. You can sit down and count how many devotees have gone through divorce that you know, you see? And think about that really for a minute. And then later on, we can get back to the devotee who has done the real statistics on it, really, you know? Yeah, but I should have noted, but I know somebody was giving class and they were saying like that, really, and they said that was what the research shows. You know?
No, there's no research. I'm sorry. I just want to stop rumors. Mm-hmm. People, you know, just say things.
But anyhow, your point is really appreciated. That is good, really.
Okay.
You know, yeah. The automatology has a point there, really.
you were pointing out that movies are a source of sex indulgent. The push this in the movie. So would you say that it's...
Love stories especially.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
they call it love stories.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. not especially the Indian movies, you know. The Western movies be a little more gross, really, but
So would you say that for a man or a woman in Krishna consciousness, it would be unchaste to look at movies?
It is, yeah, of course. Of course, but you know, when I'm speaking before I was a devotee, when I used, you know, I mean, I used to look at so
because
many
a lot of people, they think, oh, I'm not doing it, but this is okay.
Yeah. No, but I'm not really looking at movies and I've stopped movies a long time.
I'm not talking about you, I'm talking about in general.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And another thing too, one aspect of my preaching sometimes, I try to get to popular people, and especially movie stars and so, and try to probably get them to chant a little bit, you know? So maybe that's how I probably get a little connected to this movie thing. Yeah. Somebody else has a question here? What about you, Prabhu? Would you like to admit, you have something to say? Yeah. And Prabhuji, you like to say something? After him.
So I noticed that social media and all these other sources where you get news and all, these are also a source of subtle sex. So how would you recommend devotees to avoid these platforms?
Well, it's good to really... I mean, I can remember when we were in temple, I mean, you know, so many years. We didn't have phones and thing. We were, you know. Now it's a little more difficult because the phone is there. As soon as you open it, really, something, you know. So you have to be, a little more cautious about it. Yeah.
Thank you for a very nice class. Somebody asked about social media. There's a Bhakti BRG group that meets at krishna.com. It's a very good resource if you want to stop any social media addiction.
Oh, okay. Well, you hear that part, right, Prabhu? Yeah. Yeah.
BRG. Oh, Bhakti Recovery Group. Oh, BRG.com? BRG.com? Oh, it's BRG in the Alachua Temple newsletter. To overcome any addiction, actually.
Yep.
Especially social media.
Yeah, if we're not careful, really, you know, we're exposed there. Like Maharaj was saying the other day here, as soon as he opens the phone, so wow, something unpleasant. Pictures, yeah. Yes, Prabhu?
I didn't really have anything specific to add, but in general, what Srila Prabhupada gave and what our acharyas gave is really fully competent to help in all situations, both material and spiritual. So many devotees, they have their own individual karmic portfolios, which means they have their own previous material impressions that they come with. And at the same time, they may have some spiritual impressions from a previous life as well. So sometimes there is difficult navigation when you bring two people together and they have to work out their individual karmic portfolios and try to make a unit. So these things are not unheard of. And in a Kali Yuga, with social engineering, with the facility of social media, TV, all these things, it becomes even more difficult. You quoted one verse from the 12th canto of Bhagavatam. So in Kali Yuga, it's very difficult. So the grace of Srila Prabhupada, in particular, was that he fulfilled the prophecy of Mahaprabhu to give an alternative to all kinds of people, that if they'll become truly interested in this path, it will be resolution to many, many problems that arise in the Kali Yuga. In fact, not the whole 12th canto, but especially starting from the second chapter, Vyasadeva has systematically gone through from the first canto, and in the very first verse, he described the glory of love of God. And then in the third verse, he gave a blessing that many saintly persons would be roaming the earth, and he's giving the blessing that you'll meet one, and you'll get this love of God. By the time he gets to the 11th canto, he describes the process of bhakti in many conversations like the Navayogindra Zamaraj Nimi. But then in the 12th canto, he sees that Kali Yuga is coming. So then he says, how is it going to happen that in the Kali Yuga, all these wonderful things I've described, love of God, all the different teachings I've given about Nam, like in Ajamilu Pakyan, all the things I've told about surrender, like in Prahlad Charit, how will this happen? And then he has the darshan, Vyasadeva has the darshan of Mahaprabhu. So he writes one last verse, Nama Sankirtanayasa Sava Papa Pranasanam, Pranamo Dukkha Samanas, Tam Namo Mingharam Param. He writes this verse, which predicts the coming of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So he says that in spite of all the difficulties of Kali Yuga, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu will come. That's the very last verse in the 12th canto of Bhagavatam. After that, he puts his pen down. He enters into Gaur Lila as Vrindavan Das Thakur, and he continues writing in the form of Chaitanya Bhagavat. So what Srimad Bhagavatam is given, and especially the mercy of Mahaprabhu appearing, gave a sort of benediction that even though Kali Yuga is so difficult, and there are so many individual problems and issues and so forth, if anybody will genuinely get the mercy of a sadhu, like Srila Prabhupada, and enter into the process, all kinds of problems can be solved. We don't really need other modalities and so forth and so on. Just like I remember the idea that if you wanted to have children, you should chant 50 rounds. But the idea was just to create some kind of purification. Because if you're chanting 50 rounds while you're meditating, I'm going to have sex after 50 rounds. it's not really substantive in terms of, you know, chanting 50 rounds.
Well, that's true, but I mean, that was one of the rules we had to follow.
Well, yeah, I also heard the same thing, but devotees would be chanting 50 rounds while meditating, you know, and having sex life. So it's not really optimal. But anyway, if anybody will take to the process very seriously, Bhagavad Gita is guaranteeing that raso rajam raso piyasha param jusvan vartate. If the taste of hearing Hari Katha and chanting Hari Nam and associating with sadhus becomes prominent, so many problems will be resolved. Because if a person is generally unhappy, that can create unhappiness in every situation they're in, whether it's marriage, whether you're single. And then you start thinking, well, if I'm single, I should get married. If I'm married, I should get divorced. You understand? But if you become satisfied at heart by the methodology that's given in bhakti, it will solve many, many problems. So the real thing is finding and practicing genuine bhakti. So many things.
Yeah, definitely. That's the greatest solution, you know, greatest solution. But like I said, from, you know, what I bought, like, I know, I mean, speaking about the younger devotees, I know, like, man, like this Mataji was saying, show some statistics, really. But maybe I might even get into the statistics a little bit. You know, just to back up what I heard and what, you know, what I'm saying, really. But you rightly say that solid Krishna conscious foundation, right, is essential. But even to that, if we reflect, how many of our sannyasis fell down? I mean, let us say we had, how many sannyasis we probably had, about 500, 1,000? But at least, how many? Now. No, but like, who, in the past, you know? And just like a few handful remain, you know? So that you know, just that alone, you know, but, and even for grihasthas, I mean, I could recall even so many who separated too, you know. But anyhow, like I said, maybe that area needs a little more attention. And thank you all for listening and be so patient, really. Srimad Bhagavatam ki.